Don't look now. Jays have won 8 of their last 9 games.
Hot.
The Jays are hot. And the show is rounding back into form. Austin's back producing. Jobo is back. And in classic fashion, Joe already wants credit for doing nothing.
Oh my goodness.
Literally sat down terrible. And went, I didn't break the biggest rule of the show, which is start ripping the top topics at JD in the green room right before we get going on
the
show.
Don't do the show in the green room.
Like, thanks, Joe. So sick. You were able to keep your mouth shut for 10 whole minutes?
It was very difficult.
Hey, buddy.
It's very difficult.
Hey, round of applause for you. Good job, Joe.
It was a very difficult
good job. It's great to have you back, kid. Where were
it's
you?
It's good to be back.
Cottage?
Cottage, yeah.
How was that?
It was good. I was getting eaten alive by mosquitoes and deer
That's
flies.
Your big report back?
Yeah.
Mosquitoes at a lake?
It's the worst.
Nice.
The deer flies, man.
Family cottage.
Family was great, though.
Yeah. Maybe people like their families more. I feel like for me, a night at the cottage with my family, you know? A night. Maybe two. A week like you did? No. Cannot do it. No, cannot do it. I'm a little groggy today. It's like a Monday grogs I got going on. Jays are hot. I'm going to talk to Ben Nicholson Smith about him in a second. I started watching Quarterback on Netflix. Good start. I am curious how they got the three quarterbacks. Because it's Mahomes.
Yeah.
You go, holy. You go, Kirk Cousins. All right. And then it's Marcus Mariota. It's just.
Oh, come on, poor Mariota.
No, but I'm wondering if they did it because they wanted to have three very different storylines or if those were the only three quarterbacks that would do it. Because this to me is an awesome series. Obviously, Netflix doing more of these things like they did the F1 series, then they did the golf series. They've done what's tennis is called?
Full Swing.
Breakpoint.
What?
Breakpoint.
No. What's it called?
Full Swing's golf. Thank you, Joe.
Yeah. Either way, yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're doing all these series. I really hope the football one takes off because I love Hard Knocks, but this is kind of a refreshed view of Hard Knocks, a little bit different. Give me some of the best players in the game. Give me some of the quarterback perspectives. There's something weird about I love watching quarterbacks watch film with their coaches. I could watch that all day, where it's just guys going over the tape and learning the playbook and sitting there with the backup quarterback. There's something about that content that just, it does it for me. It clicks with my sports brain. I sit there and I watch that and I go, yes, this makes me happy. And getting to watch Patrick Mahomes do that and Kirk Cousins do that, it was very enjoyable for me. So yeah, there's some lameness, there's some cheesiness so far. I'm only a couple in.
Right.
But I really, really, really enjoy the idea, and I really hope that it extends. Anyways, a lot of Jays, 8-2 in their last 10. By the way, Rays, 3-7 in their last 10. And guess what? The Rays are still, I think, 7 games up.
The Rays are 7 games, 6 games ahead of
all right.
the Jays.
Right on.
Yeah.
It's a thing, though, now. It's a possibility. It's not what it was, a month into the season where it was a complete write-off?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the Jays are game and a half up on the now also hot Red Sox and the freezing cold New York Yankees, who stink.
They're three games ahead of the Red Sox and Yankees.
Yankees absolutely rot. Yeah, sorry, of course, because those guys are a game and a half back of the wild card, which is where Houston sits.
Mm-hmm.
Jays are in two hole.
Yeah.
Jays are sitting pretty all of a sudden after this nice little run. And so, big couple series coming up. Padres, a more, serious baseball team than some of the ones that they've beaten recently.
Mm-hmm.
Not a good. We're not doing the face of the game conversation anymore between Tatis and Vlad Jr., though. That was once a thing. These are the two faces of baseball. Not so much. Nice win at the home run derby for Vladdy, and then did the classic, I'm using all the home runs for BP. You won't see any home runs in a game. Practice, I will hit the home run balls.
He hit a home run on the weekend.
Yeah, I will hit the home runs. Yeah, I will hit so many home runs now, but but it was just, it was nice to watch the Blue Jays actually score runs. The bullpen has been red hot. All of a sudden, Ryu's down in AAA, and yeah, he better strike suckers out in AAA, but didn't walk anybody in his appearance. I think he got close to 70 pitches. The plan is for him to go to 80 in the next outing. There's some optimism around the Blue Jays, not including anything to do with, Mitch White or Alejandro Kirk, but the rest of those two guys, other than those two guys, things are feeling good. So yeah, Ben Nicholson-Smith at the letters, MLB insider and Genius analyst joins me now. What's up, brother? How we doing?
JD, I'm doing well. Good to be talking some Jays with you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's start with this. What are you most optimistic about from the weekend? Is it the offense or the bullpen?
It's got to be the bullpen. I mean, they were great, with the exception of Mitch White loading the bases to round out yesterday's game. The bullpen was incredible. And you think about, okay, they don't have their ace starting pitcher. They don't have their closer. So they're going to need to rely on their bullpen this weekend against a pretty good Diamondbacks team. They didn't look good, but still, on paper, a pretty good team. They've, you know, came in 10 games above 500 in first place. So in those circumstances, you just wouldn't be sure what to expect, but they really stepped up. Guys like Jimmy Garcia stepping up. Nate Pearson was great Friday and Saturday. Tim Mesa just throws basically one pitch and then gets out of that jam. Swanson was really good all weekend. So I think that the Jays, as they move ahead here, have to feel really good about their bullpen. And of course, you're going to look for upgrades. Of course, you know, maybe there is a way to improve on a guy like a Mitch White in that bullpen, but man, they are in a pretty good spot with their relievers.
Yeah. Going into yesterday, the bullpen ERA was fifth, their K per nine, which is, this is the most shocking of them all, because we've talked ad nauseum about how these guys don't have enough swing and miss in the bullpen. And I know Nate Pearson changed that to a degree, and then the way that Tim Mays has been pitching. But yeah, third in all of baseball, K per nine. And then walks per nine, they're first. They're not giving any free passes. It's a really, really good job that this bullpen has done lately, and it has been a bit of a quiet story. And so, yeah, it makes the most sense to kind of highlight them, especially no Romano coming out of this thing. But yeah, I don't, like, you're right about the upgrade thing. Of course, there's always going to be shopping around. You can always potentially add a name, but given the resurgence of Richards, the way that he has just completely bounced back, the way I feel now about Nate Pearson, the way I feel now about Tim Mesa, the fact that they, you know, they're going to have a signing coming back into the mix for this bullpen, like, I think it's safe to say right now, from my vantage point, it's the lowest of all of the priorities heading into the deadline, which is kind of shocking to me given where this front office has been with building this thing the last couple of years.
Yeah, and you just think about the standard, okay, contending team, you're always looking for bullpen help, you're always looking for rotation help. Mm-hmm. And the Blue Jays, you know, of course, you still have to stay in on those areas. Even with Manoah now back in the rotation and Ryu coming back, you know, there's still the Gausman question and there's still the need for depth. So you're going to check and see if there's a way to acquire some sort of starting pitching help with the deadline. And the same with the bullpen, because even with Chad Green coming back, and even with Jay Jackson now emerging, and this bullpen looks really good, you still need to be in there in case someone trips on a dugout staircase in 10 days time and you need to know what the market is. So, you know, at the same time though, for this rest of this season, and even now we're going way ahead, but even looking ahead to next year, next offseason, I mean, this is a team that's pretty well positioned from a pitching standpoint, where they have five starting pitchers, they have a bullpen that's in place. This deadline and even this offseason, it's really going to be about adding bats for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I agree. By the way, we've seen, like, the Gausman stuff. I watched you and Arden talking about it over the weekend just on TV. And it seemed like, hey, they're just being overly cautious. Like, all right, now he's not pitching in the next series either. I'm like, all right. We're still as confident that this is just kind of a nothing overly cautious situation because they have time, they can use it.
Well, they'll end up giving him at least 2 weeks, because he last pitched on the Saturday before the All-Star break, and he obviously didn't pitch this past weekend, and by the time he pitches next, at the earliest, it'll be next weekend against Seattle, so that'll be a nice little two-week break. I mean, that's pretty much an unofficial IL stint as it is. We'll see if he ends up needing a bit more time. Obviously, he's been able to throw on flat ground at Rogers Center, so that's a good sign. He hasn't been throwing a bullpen session yet, so still some strides to go there for Gausman. But they are leading us to believe that they expect him back at some point pretty soon.
Okay. And then what about Romano? Same thing?
Yeah, and he's saying that he's been able to go, you know, progress, you know, so he's, I think, in a good spot. I would expect that he pitches at some point against the Padres.
All right, then, you know, I'm going to get into basically all the rehab guys here, just since this is what we're doing. Like, the Ryu stuff has been very public, and so I don't know what kind of mystery is left there, but I am kind of curious what you think is, you know, his role is going to be with this team. But you mentioned Chad Green, and he was always bound to be the, hey, he's the actual deadline addition to the bullpen. This is someone who does bring swing and miss. This is someone who has pitched within the division, someone who I've, like, always been a huge fan of. But he's been, like, the news around him, if we're talking about him versus the other three guys, or even Ryu, who's been gone all year, it's been far more quiet. What's your understanding of where Chad Green's at?
So he's in Florida physically, and he's working his way back. He's throwing bullpens and live BPs. He hasn't been in games, so they haven't started his game clock, which to me says he's behind Ryu. I mean, Ryu is actually progressing pretty quickly right here, even to the point that you kind of wonder if they needed to do something with Gausman. If Gausman needed another week and he had to go on the injured list, would you call up Ryu and start him against the Mariners? I mean,
yes.
I don't think that, right? Like, I would. I don't think it's the craziest thing to consider that, you know, just given how well he pitched at AAA on the weekend. So I think Ryu has to be your insurance behind Gausman there, which speaks to how quickly he's been able to come back from Tommy John. And Green had Tommy John basically the same time, but he seems to be on a slower timetable. Now, once he does get to the point that he's in games, it probably doesn't take all that long. Like, once he's in an actual minor league game, he could be in a major league game within 2 weeks. But he hasn't been in that minor league game just yet, so that to me says he's probably more than a couple weeks away.
So I thought the story of this weekend, for sure, along with you, was the bullpen. It was just, yeah, to do that without Romano and have everybody come in and look great, other than, again, Mitch White, which I'll say it again because, boy, that, it's frustrating to watch him pitch and realize that the Jays actually gave something up for him. But I thought the story of the weekend was the bullpen. It was nice to see the bats come alive and actually give them some room for error, even though a lot of it was late in ball games. You're like, who cares? It's not, you know, when it happens. It's just, does it happen at all? It did. But now this week that we're going to pivot forward into, to me, is going to be all about the starting pitching, because you have Manoah's next start against a more difficult opponent than throwing him out there against the Tigers and saying, hey, these guys stink, go mow them down, which he did. He totally exceeded expectations. I don't want to take anything away from him. He looked great. He was in command. Awesome, awesome, awesome. But this is another step. He hasn't fully earned anybody's trust back yet, right? Like, we need to see what happens with Manoah. We need to see what happens with Gausman's injury because, yeah, it seems okay-ish. It doesn't sound like it's dire straits. He hasn't been put on the IL, but it still is going to feel a lot better once you actually see him out there back in the rotation. And then the other guy is going to be Ryu, where he pitches one more time down at AAA, and he keeps doing what he was doing, which was, I think, 5 punch-outs and 1 walk, right? Only, or no walks. Did he walk anyone?
I don't think he walked anyone.
Yeah, maybe he didn't walk anybody. Gave up a bomb, right? 1 solo shot, that was the big moment against Ryu, but otherwise looked like Ryu. They're building the pitch count back up. But yeah, if he looks ready to go, I don't know how you don't start mixing him back in and saying, yeah, let's see what he looks like at the major league level. So yeah, and then you add to on top of that, the last component of this is, out of all the rumors that are circulating around the Blue Jays right now, the names that are starting to pop are starting pitchers. We've seen the link to Marcus Stroman over the last 48 hours, where there's been a couple of different reports that the Jays are hot and heavy for him. And then I even saw their name linked to Jordan Montgomery, which I thought was kind of interesting. But yeah, I think that this week is going to be about starting pitching and the Blue Jays trying to piece together what they look like heading into the deadline.
Yeah, I think that's a good read. I think that's a good read for sure. And there's a lot of moving pieces there, right? When you start with Ryu, and he did not walk anyone. He struck out 5 in that outing on the weekend for Buffalo. So it's either his last AAA start or his first major league start this week, you would think. I mean, once he gets to 85 pitches at AAA, you're not going to keep him there. I mean, I think they would bring him back after that. So you got Ryu, Manoah, like you said. I mean, he needs to continue building his, you know, beyond the results, his delivery looked better, his confidence, his demeanor on the mound, all of those things look better in Detroit. He, you know, talking to him afterwards, he really seemed to be in a really good headspace. He seemed to be feeling really good about the outing. So all that's positive, but he needs to build on that against San Diego. And that's not an easy offense, even though this team is struggling. So, you know, you add on to that Gausman's, you know, questions around his health. I think you're right to say that this rotation is really going to reveal a lot about itself this week. And, you know, the trade stuff, you know, as I said, they have to be in on the market for starting pitchers. I would be really surprised if Marcus Stroman pitches for the Blue Jays this year. I just would be really, really surprised for a number of reasons. Yeah. But, you know, of course, you see those rumors and it's always interesting, but I would be very, very surprised.
You want to go through those reasons beyond the prospect depth?
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I mean, well, yeah. So there's number one, right? Like he's going to be very coveted. And the Cubs are going to have their choice of a lot of teams. So there's reason number one. Reason number two is I actually don't see starting pitching as the most pressing need. So even if the Blue Jays are going to survey things and be thorough, I don't see starting pitching as, you know, when they have potentially six starters, I don't know that you need to go out and get a seventh. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, this is pretty significant too, but I just don't see Marcus Stroman being the guy that the Blue Jays pursue. Like they know each other obviously really well. And I think that Stroman still has some fondness for Toronto. Mm-hmm. He obviously still has some connections here. Ultimately, the front office is going to prioritize winning. They're not going to be sitting there thinking, you know, oh, it's not about whether they like the guy or not. It's about whether he can help them win. And Marcus Stroman can help any major league team win games. But we're still talking about someone who, you know, when he was traded out of Toronto, like that day, you heard shouting from the clubhouse. Like
it was
something
acrimonious.
Was going on.
Like, yeah, it was not a good departure.
I don't know who was shouting at whom, but I was standing outside the clubhouse that day, and I heard shouting when he was traded. And then Marcus Stroman was walking out of the clubhouse. Myself and a couple other writers were trying to talk to him. It was his last, you know, moments in Toronto, and he just, you know, walks right past. You know, does not talk to the media that day. And look, it's an emotional day. Mm-hmm. You know, these things happen. I just personally, I don't see it. So, you know, we'll see. I would be very, very surprised.
Yeah, the only way that I could see it is if the Jays were moving one of their starters back to Chicago. And that doesn't make any sense because there's no guy that makes sense for Chicago that Toronto owns, right? Like that,
I'm sure they'd love Manoah, but I don't think the Jays are going to do that.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's a non-starter. You're not trading Manoah for... Yeah, you're not trading big Manoah for little Manoah, you know? Like, that's just not happening. It's just not for older Manoah. You're not going backwards with that one. So I don't really get it. But I will say this. How much of these next couple weeks do you think, like the Ryu factor, the Gausman health... let's say to a lesser extent too, the Bassett health. And I know the broadcast talking about rubber arm and all this different stuff, but Arden was mentioning how he was a little banged up going to the All-Star break. And I don't know how much that's improved or something that can improve. Plus what Manoah is going to do is actually going to shape how aggressive they get with that market.
So yeah, I just, the starting pitching market.
Yeah. Like let's say the best case scenario happens where Manoah starts to look like himself over the next couple of weeks. And we're like, oh crap, Manoah looks like he's back. Is there something that he can do essentially in 2 weeks to convince the Blue Jays that they don't need to go out and address this in a meaningful way? Same thing with if Gausman is hurt, then that changes the parameters. If Bassett is hurt, that changes things in terms of how aggressive they have to get. Hard to imagine that there's anything Ryu can do in 2 weeks. But it feels like Manoah has to be the biggest part of all of this that I'm talking about when it comes to like shaping their deadline plans with starting pitching.
Yeah, because, you know, ultimately it seems like they have the numbers right now. So you want to have some confidence that you have the top of the rotation guys. And I think, you know, when healthy, he's an ace. Barrios looks like a really solid number two starter. And, you know, beyond that, you need one or two others to make your way through the four rounds of the playoffs that you're going to have to win if you're a wild card team. Mm-hmm. Which I do agree, by the way, that the AL East needs to still be the target for the Blue Jays. Six games out, I mean, that certainly is a lot more appealing than playing a wild card series. So we'll see where that goes. But as for Manoah, I really think that if he can show them in two starts that he's able to stay within the strike zone, attack hitters in the zone, repeat his delivery, and just stay in that fluid, athletic attack mode, then you're talking about someone who will be an effective, you know, let's not say an ace, but let's say a number three, number four starter. Like that's a better than a back of the rotation guy. And I think that's within his realm of possibilities for the next 2 weeks. And that would certainly help the Blue Jays as they move ahead here.
Yeah. I can't imagine them taking what few assets they have. And that remains the thing from everyone that I've talked to is no, there's no surprise guys in the farm system right now that other teams are just coveting en masse. They've got the same names that we've all heard. And yeah, so the idea of them being in on the Stroman type still doesn't feel overly realistic. But are you starting to get a sense of maybe some of the other Jays targets that they are looking at?
I think it's pretty broad at this point. I think it's really broad. I remember last year this time, you know, they were looking at relievers and the list of names that they had was about 70 names, 70. So, I mean, I would expect a similarly broad approach this year. I think that that's where you get reports that, you know, they've checked on a Marcus Stroman because, you know, this is a front office that is certainly very thorough. I think they'll be equally thorough when it comes to the relief pitchers this year, even with that being less of a need. And I think they also need to be checking on bats. I mean, it's pretty clear that this team, you know, when they're DHing Alejandro Kirk, when Brandon Belt is your primary DH, when you look at the bench, you know, on days that a Kevin Kiermaier has a stiff back, for example, you know, you just start running out of bats that you really want to use. And I think that it's clear that a switch hitter or a right-handed hitter would be the best option for this team. But Alejandro Kirk going into the season, I think, was a logical candidate to DH when he was a Silver Slugger winner and had come off such a great season. But, you know, you look back at what he's done in the last calendar year, he's a 239 hitter. He's got a 316 slugging percentage. He's got 7 home runs in the last calendar year. That's not a guy I want DHing. And Alejandro Kirk's still an important part of this team. But if I'm the Blue Jays, I'm trying to find other guys who can DH along with Brandon Belt, because even if Belt continues being as great as he has for the last few months, are you sure that he's going to be healthy? You know, are you sure that you can't upgrade over an Ernie Clement or a Nathan Lucas on your bench? Like, they have to find a position player. They have to find a bat this deadline.
Yeah, I think that they've got to find two. The interesting one with Kirk to me is, okay, for sure they need the DH right-handed bat, right? That's just very clear. If you say, what's the number one need of the Blue Jays? That's it right now. Like, to me, there's no question. But Kirk, over the last month, and I know we have the full calendar year of bad Kirk, but his OPS in the last 28 days is 256, Ben. Like,
yeah,
he's unplayable at this point. And I'm starting to wonder if we're not just entering the territory of, hey, Kirk's going to lose DH at-bats, so they're looking for a DH. Do you think that they could be in the mix for a catcher? Like, ironically, after an offseason that was all about, hey, the Jays have too many catchers, the Jays are going to shop a catcher, and they trade Moreno. Like, is that one of the ways that they can improve this team, is looking at that market?
Yeah, it could be. It could be. I mean, I think it depends on who the catcher is, because I do think that going into next year, you gotta, you know, you work with Kirk in the offseason, you're still optimistic that at age 25, whatever he'll be, he can bounce back from this season. You know it's in there. You know he has the bat to ball skills. But if you can get someone this season to help you out for the course of the next couple of months, then that could help you. That could make a difference. And Sal Perez obviously is the big name. I think he has 3 years of control remaining. I don't see him being a fit. So, you know, maybe it's a much smaller addition, smaller scale addition. But I don't think you rule that out at this point, because you have to be open-minded. Having depth at catcher is always a good thing. You know, it's, you're one injury away from playing Tyler Heineman and Alejandro Kirk, right? If Danny Jansen were to take a foul ball off a forearm in the wrong spot, right?
So, Danny, not exactly, you know, Cal Ripken Jr. either.
Right. So, you know, I think you gotta explore those options. To me, I'm probably starting in the outfield. The catcher wouldn't be the first place I would look, but yeah, you could be open to it.
Yeah. I just feel like you have to be at this point. Like, Kirk gets up and you know there's not going to be any extra base power. And then even if he does poke one of his singles, which is getting rarer and rarer, what, he's the worst base runner in the entire sport? Like, he's got to be there with, yeah, like, what, Miguel Cabrera? Like, who, yeah, how many guys are on the list that are below him? So he gets up and he's like clogging up the base paths, and you're like, what is the point here? And everyone's made like the discussion about how his defense has improved. I'm like, all right, great. But he's not a gold glover behind the plate. He's still not your primary option like Danny Jansen is. Danny Jansen is your best defensive catcher still. And so at some point here over the next couple of weeks, like, if we're talking about stuff like, hey, what can Alek Manoah show to make sure that the Jays don't need to be a little bit more drastic when it comes to what their starting pitching depth is going to look like? I just have to feel like catcher is growing in terms of import. You're right. I'm with you. I'd love to see the outfield bat. I just want to see the DH. Shulman was on here last week, and I agree with his position, which is they need a right-handed Brandon Belt, like an older guy, desperate to win, who grinds out at-bats, makes pitchers work for it, and can draw a walk. Like, that would just be perfect. But if you told me right now today, hey, what's the number two thing that this team needs? I would say it's catching depth.
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt. It wouldn't hurt. I think as it stands now, with the roster that you do have, Danny Jansen needs to be catching like 4 or 5 days a week.
Exactly. And that's a big workload for him, man.
It is. It is. And, you know, we're still you know, 2.5 months of regular season baseball away from the playoffs, and then you have a full month of playoffs if you're going to accomplish what you want to accomplish. So that's a lot of baseball left, and that's a lot of wear and tear. So you really do need to be sharing that, and that's obviously why I'm not saying 7 days a week for Danny Jansen, but he's just hitting so much better than Kirk right now. And, you know, Jansen, you know, same sort of look for him, right? Last calendar year, he's got 19 homers and a 788 OPS. Mm-hmm. So this is a guy who's really consistently been a very good hitter for the Blue Jays, including in some big moments like yesterday with that 3-run double. So you feel great about Danny Jansen. I think if Kirk is catching Manoah, let's say, so he's in there once every 5 days, maybe he's, you know, DHing or pinch hitting beyond that once in a while, because he's still a good pinch hit option if you need a single. You know, I think you're okay with that. I don't think you need to desperately go out there and try to add a second catcher. If Kirk's catching a couple days a week, that's totally fine. But I think that you definitely need to be out there looking for bats. A right-handed Brandon Belt would be great, kind of like a Steve Pierce, who they traded away 5 years ago to the Red Sox and obviously went on to be, you know, the World Series MVP. But they need to find this year's version of a Steve Pierce.
Yeah. God. They got Espinal back in that trade, right? That's how that worked out, right? And it wasn't
just flip it this year. Yeah. Trade Espinal away, and then you get a new Steve Pierce.
God, that Steve Pierce run, I'll never forget watching him at first base do the splits over and over and over again and just pick balls going, wait, what? And then him get just extremely hot and carry Boston to that World Series. I do still believe, though, that the writers were like me going, we don't want to fully admit we were so wrong on David Price, and they did give it to Pierce. It should have been David Price. He should have been World Series MVP. But either way, man, that was one hell of a run. Do you know who is that Steve Pierce to you right now? Because, like, I had Morosi last week. We were talking about it, and he strangely mentioned Bellinger. And I can't see another lefty bat right now for them. And I just don't know where he plays or who he replaces. But he did make the point of this front office is a group where if they target someone, they're like, they return to the scene of the crime, right? Who was the pitcher that was just in town not too long ago? Is it Heaney? Andrew Heaney?
Yes.
Yeah, where they were like, yeah, I turned the Blue Jays down again. And my wife went, don't you feel bad turning these guys down year over year?
Yeah.
But that is a little bit their MO. And I don't know if that's the exact same with every front office. I'm sure if you like someone, you don't stop liking them immediately. But yeah, have you seen any of those names out there where you go, oh, you know what? The Jays liked this guy, and so don't be surprised if they circle back around when it comes to the deadline.
Well, I do think it's a good point by Morosi that they do tend to circle back, right? And Kevin Gausman would be proof of that when you think about how many times they tried to acquire him before they actually did. I don't see Bellinger personally, just because I think they are much more likely to target a right-handed hitter. But you know, you look around, there's not a ton of great right-handed hitters out there. I do think, like, where I gravitate is the Mets, and I, you know, they're 7 games under 500 right now. We'll see what the next couple weeks bring for them. You probably can't make that trade today, but I look at Tommy Pham, and, you know, he's 35 years old. He's got a 271 batting average and 823 OPS. He's stolen 10 bases. He's got 9 homers. Mm-hmm. That's who you want to me. Like, I would not be surprised if Tommy Pham, in the course of August and September, goes and hits 10 home runs, or, you know, leads his team in home runs. He might, the way the Blue Jays are going with not very much power from Springer and Vladdy and Kirk and, you know, Varsho and a lot of these guys that we thought might have a bit more power this year, Tommy Pham might hit more home runs than anyone on the Blue Jays in the course of the next 2 months. You know, it's possible. I'm not saying it's likely, but it's possible. And so I think that would be a name that I would point to.
Yeah, I like that name. That's Ennis's name too. He's starting to get a little bit of popularity here. And I think one of the reasons you like Tommy Pham is the same reason that I like Danny Jansen, which is I just believe in clutch. And I'm doing this with you before we pivot to something a little bit more, I don't even want to say serious, but what is your, like, you're a real baseball guy, you know? You're not me who's just watching on the couch, having fun, you know, having a beer at the Rogers Center going down there. But I really do believe that Danny Jansen is him, as the kids say, where he steps up in a big spot, and despite him not being one of the team's best five hitters, I go, this is great that you're here right now. We wanted you here right now. And I know that maybe some of this is a bit of recency bias, considering that he's had two massive hits, like, in the last, what, two series? Or three series. But, yeah, what do you make of it when you say, like, someone is a clutch hitter, and, like, how much do you put faith in something like that?
Well, you know, I kind of think Danny Jansen is one of the Jays' best five hitters right now, which is maybe a good thing or bad thing, depending on how you want to spin it. But
That made me feel both ways, where I went, you said it, yeah. And I went, you know what? Yeah, he might be. And then I went, yeah, I don't know if that's the best, that's what you wanted.
Yeah. As for the question of clutch, I think it's John Schneider's definition of clutch to say that it's doing the same thing you normally do, just with higher stakes. And I kind of like that definition, because I don't think that, you know, Derek Jeter, for example, or David Ortiz, pick your clutch player in baseball. Sure. I don't think they necessarily did anything different mechanically or with their preparation. And the results were, like, Derek Jeter hit singles in spring training, and he hit singles in May, and he hit singles in the playoffs. And, you know, it adds up to an amazing, amazing career. And David Ortiz hit home runs in spring training, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that Danny Jansen is basically doing the same things that he normally would do. I think the clutch is real. I think a lack of clutch is real. I think the pressure is real. I mean, it is real. I mean, players talk about getting nervous. Players talk about, you know, the mental side of it. There's definitely a skill to handling that pressure. And sometimes it's experience. Sometimes it's, you know, you've been there before. And Derek Jeter played in October every single year, so it became kind of normal for him. And I have no doubt that that helped him. So I think that there is a difference. Like, some players are not good at handling the stress of trying to perform in a huge spot, and some players are good at it. But I think the guys who are good at it basically access their May 15th mode, and they are just consistent in accessing that.
Yeah, I agree with you. The only part of it that I think is underrated, and I don't know how much of this Danny Jansen has right now, to be quite honest, but is that when you're someone who doesn't let the moment get to you and you're competing against someone, that can get to them. So you start to build that reputation up. And I think that part of being clutch and that leveling effect is that it might rock the person that's pitching to you, you know, or the hitter, where they go, ah, man, I know this person's not going to make a mistake, or I know this person's not going to give me the easy out, that I'm going to have to battle through this. And that mental wear and tear, I think that that adds into the clutch, that the person's ethos, that their reputation, it actually has an impact on these games. It has to. Like, it has to. If you've ever, like, done anything, played golf next to somebody who you think is kind of clutch, and you're close and you're tight with it, you're thinking about stuff like that. You're like, this person's not going to mistake. Who's likely to make it? Me. And that affects you. And I know that that's like, hey, you're not a pro athlete mentality, but I think that extends to everybody. I really do. I think that's all walks of life kind of situation. You're just around people where they know they have that confidence, and you start to doubt your own self. And I think that maybe Danny Jansen starts to develop a little bit of that, just as a tough out, as a guy who's going to make you work for it. This one's a little, I'm ending on this one because I couldn't start with this, but it is a story out of the weekend for me. And I pitched it even on Friday. I led my show with it. So the Jays sweep. Awesome. They beat Arizona. They, you know, whoop them up. They get the three wins. That's by far the most important thing. It's an overall positive weekend. But this is the team that you made your splashy trade with in the offseason. And Varsho comes in and he actually gets an RBI to end that game. But he doesn't start because it's a lefty pitcher. And they decide, all right, we're going to give you a day off. And it's like, the guy that you got for set free in free agency, Kevin Kiermaier, is also an awesome outfielder defensively. Like, I know that he's not leading him in defensive runs saved or whatever. Like, that has been Varsho, and Varsho's been healthier, whatever, blah, 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 blah. But Kiermaier has been a stud against left-handed pitching. And Varsho just cannot find it unless it's essentially that drag bunt or he's using his speed to get on. And, yeah, Gurriel, like, Moreno hits the bomb. Gurriel has two hilariously spectacular plays in the outfield. We always knew he had the arm, but the one diving play was especially beautiful. And, you know, he's piecing hits together. And I couldn't help but leave the weekend thinking about the optics of the Varsho trade today. And, yeah, how we're feeling about it, especially as Varsho, like, has started, July, not exactly red hot after a much better June. Yeah, like, what do you think the Jays are expecting at this point? Because there's been a lot of discussion about the pressure that he puts on himself. But this isn't the guy at the plate that the Jays were expecting. We thought there was going to be more power. We thought that there was going to be more on base. You know, how does this turn around for him?
Yeah, it's been a tough stretch, right? Like, you think about 4-for-33 in July. Like, he's basically done nothing at the plate for this last couple of weeks here. And he's been underwhelming at the plate all season long relative to what he did last year, relative to what kind of potential he had. So Where it goes from here, I think he still probably projects as an average or slightly to above average hitter with some power, who can play really, really good defense and make good decisions on the bases and be a really fast base runner for you, who overall just impacts the game in a lot of different ways and is a really good ball player. And I think that that should be the expectation for Varsho. I certainly expect that of him. I think that he can be an impact player for the Blue Jays for the next few years. It just hasn't looked like that right now. So, you know, I look at the trade as a whole, and I think the Diamondbacks did well. This is obviously a trade that Diamondbacks should be happy with, to have Moreno there, to have Lourdes Gurriel Jr. having an all-star season before he hits free agency. All those things are good for Arizona, but I don't think that makes it a loss for the Blue Jays. I don't think that they're necessarily a better team with Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Gabriel Moreno still in this organization right now. I think that Varsho's defense has made a big difference. And, you know, like, if it, put it this way, and like, I'm kind of considering this for the first time as I ask it right now, but if you could go back and just snap your fingers and undo that trade for
100%,
the last part of 2020, you would do it?
Oh yeah. Like, I wouldn't even, yeah. Like, you couldn't even finish the question. Of course I would undo it. Yeah. It's a nightmare trade. Here's why. And this has been my point all along, is those assets at the time, and I've heard from some people that Moreno was not as coveted as his Baseball America ranking, right? That some teams had some doubts about the power and blah, 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 blah. That he might have been the Blue Jays' number one prospect and guy that everyone fell in love with here, but ultimately his value was not extraordinarily high. But to me, it's like, you don't judge a trade based on even necessarily, like, first of all, I don't want to hear about, like, years of control. Like, that's nice, but we already did this with this front office a couple of years ago, and I do think that it's something that does tend to get overvalued, especially considering where the Jays are at in their competitive window, which is, hey, we want to win a World Series right now. Like, we've got 2 years with Vladdy and Bo here left. It's World Series winning time this moment. And to me, I just look at it and go, if the projection all along was to get an outfielder who can play defense and run the base as well, then you got that in Kevin Kiermaier. Like, that's gettable through free agency. That's not something that you need to trade your top prospect and another good outfielder for who's having an all-star season. And so, like, yeah, defensive run saved. Awesome. Base runner. Awesome. I love watching Dalton Varsho run. Like, truly, I mentioned this last week. He's a football player playing baseball. It's so fun watching him crash in the wall. I really like the guy. I want the guy to perform well. But for you to trade those two assets, especially given that there was a couple of years of indecision about whether or not to trade Lourdes Gurriel when he had control and going, yeah, well, we're trying to win now and he's a bat. So you kind of trade him at his lowest value and just throw him in as a chip. To me, it's like asset management. You get an F. It's an F of a trade. Lourdes might walk. It might only be 1 year of control. Yes, you're right that the Blue Jays might not be appreciably better, although I would argue that given the way that Alejandro Kirk is playing, I would love to see Moreno be able to steal at bats from him right now, or you go, hey, you know what, throw him in there. You have the righty bat. It's like, what's the easier thing to get at the deadline right now? Is it a bat that can hit home runs for you and drive in big runs? Or is it a guy who plays defense and, you know, has an OPS of, what is it now, 640? Like, I just, to me, it's a no-brainer. I'd go back and redo the trade just because I'd want to have the assets to do something different with it.
Yeah, really interesting. And, you know, that's a reasonable take. I think that, you know, if someone looks at that trade and says they would want to go and undo it, that's fair. To me, I actually think, like, you're trying to win a World Series right here. Mm-hmm. I think Varsho can help you win a World Series. I think he can be starting for you in October against really good right-handed pitching, and he can play nine innings, and he can play great defense, and he can run the bases and do some of those things better than a Lourdes Gurriel Jr. And I'm not trying to be like an apologist for the front office here when I say
no one thinks
because,
that,
you know, they've made bad trades, right? You want to talk about Mitch White for Nick Frasso? Yeah. That's a bad trade. I just don't think that, you know, Varsho is a really good player, and I just won't be surprised at all if Lourdes goes in one of his cold streaks and he is a 650 OPS.
He already has. Varsho goes last month.
Right. And you know, he looked really good this weekend, but that can come and go. And I'm not projecting Varsho. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, what if he goes out and hits, you know, 15 homers the rest of the way? What if he just goes out and he's a league average hitter, which he's been his whole career. He's been a league average to above average hitter. If he just does that, just replicates where he's been for his career, combined with his defense and his base running, he instantly becomes a very good player.
Yeah, I think he is a very good player. And I think that two things can be true here, where you might want to have him versus those two guys down the stretch in terms of who can be more valuable to you. I still think having the two guys, especially since like what we just outlined was, hey, what do the Jays need? They need a right-handed bat who can drive in runs and catching depth. It's hard for me to see the value of those two guys as more than what Varsho is going to bring you, especially given like the skill set that you need to go out and get Varsho. But yeah, to me, the main thing that will always, that I won't let go of is, I don't think that the Jays traded for Varsho thinking that he was just going to be an average bat. I think that they thought that there was going to be more to uncover there, and especially with the power. And that, you know, when we were having discussions in the offseason, and I don't mean you and I mean like the baseball community at large or the Blue Jays community at large, it was, boy, these guys are moving the fences in, and there's this power alley at the Rogers Center, and Dalton Varsho is going to rip so many home runs over that wall. And it's like, you know what I see a lot of? High heat going to Dalton Varsho and him just whiffing on it in horrific. It's like bad at bat, didn't even put some contact on it, didn't advance the runners. Like, where is he for you? Because he's pretty high for me.
Well, and you're right that there is seemingly a hole in his swing.
Yeah.
Where he can be pitched in that way where, you know, it's high heat, oftentimes up and in, and it's not looking good. It hasn't been good. I almost, like, as we're talking about this though, like, that for some reason watching hitters strike out doesn't frustrate me. Like, it really doesn't bother me. What bothers me is watching pitchers walk guys, which, as you said, you know, Mitch White, like, you're up five runs, you can't walk the bases loaded. You can't do that.
Awful.
It's just, you can't do that. That frustrates me. And then what also frustrates me is, I know this wasn't your question, but I guess I'm just
let's do it. This is what we do here. Let's just keep going.
So it's also when they make unnecessary outs on the bases.
Oh yeah.
Why?
Third, like, in baseball.
This team, like, you know, I know they went into the season, they think we want to be aggressive on the bases. We want to push it. Okay, great. So you realize, maybe this is May 15th. You realize, oh, we're actually pushing it too far. And so we actually should slow down. We let Kiermaier do his thing. We let maybe Merrifield once in a while do his thing. But basically, we're actually going to be a bit more cautious on the bases. That should have happened on May 15th. Why are we sitting here on July 17th talking about, oh, George Springer got thrown out twice, caught stealing this weekend. And Santiago Espinal is out there getting thrown out on the bases unnecessarily when we just saw earlier that same game Lourdes Gurriel Jr. show off his arm.
Yeah.
I just think this team as a whole needs to get it together on the bases and stop giving away outs, because they're an older team. They are not as fast as they think they are, and they need to start reining it in a little bit.
Yes. 1,000,000,000%. I've tried to do the why does the Blue Jays season feel more frustrating than it normally should for a market that isn't like the Blue Jays are not the Dodgers, right? But they have been feeling like, I would say, the most disappointing teams in baseball this year. Mets with a bullet by a million miles. Mariners have been super disappointing. But I think if you polled like fan base happiness, and right now excluded because now they're red hot, so people would be kind of chill about it. But there's that feeling on the surface, like all of this is very tenuous with the way people feel about the baseball team. I said number one is definitely the division thing, is being in a wild card, especially at a way team wild card. After what happened last year, I don't think that Blue Jays fans are feeling so great about it. But yeah, the other thing is, what was the identity of the team supposed to be? It was like this mature, gutty team. And to be third in Major League Baseball in outs on the bases like that is just so unbelievably unacceptable for the mandate of this offseason. So you're right. Like, for you, as someone who was told this and who watches the game closely and, you know, doesn't get wrapped up in the day-to-day like me, was looking at the, like, larger picture, of course that's one of the most frustrating things. Like, of course that's so frustrating. And yes, the Espinal one against Gurriel, where it's like, that's your teammate for years. You know that's how he got Gold Glove consideration, is because he's got a cannon for an arm and you tested it there. It's like, It feels like absent-mindedness at times. And that, yes, I think as an observer, a fan, whatever, when you feel like someone isn't putting attention into detail and not caring, which is what that is, like, yeah, that's the number one criminal offense. No doubt about it. You're right.
Yeah, it can be really frustrating to watch. Now, as long as we're talking about base running, I will shout Vladdy out, because I think his slow slide into second base
was sexy.
Was an It was an all-timer,
yeah,
right?
It was
like,
awesome.
That was,
yeah.
If they had a Hall of Fame for slides into second base, like that would have been in first ballot. It
gorgeous.
Was so good.
I know.
It was, and it's like one of those baseball categories that you think, like, it's not even like, you know, oh, best pitching performances, like best home runs, best, like you don't even think about it. It's not something, you don't go to the game thinking you want to see a nice slide into second base, but man, Vladdy just like created a new category right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, Jobo puts these videos up on YouTube. You better put the slide there on YouTube. All right, Joe?
1000%.
All right. Good job. All right, Benny, thanks for making time today, buddy. I always appreciate it. Thanks for the perspective. And again, go listen to Ben's podcast at The Letters. It's excellent. Subscribe, review. Watch him on TV. You see him everywhere. Right now on sportsnet.ca. Ben Nicholson-Smith. Talk to you soon, buddy.
Thanks, JD. Have a good one.
All right. Yeah. You put in here, per Baseball Savant, Kirk is in the first percentile of sprint speed.
Yep.
So, yeah.
First percentile.
He's as low as it goes. Low as it goes. So, yeah. The two things there, it's just, it is kind of funny that those are the two areas that the Jays could improve on, which is a righty bat, mm-hmm. like Gurriel. Although I would argue that, yeah, I want the tougher, more consistent out. And then a catching, like they would love some catching depth right now.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the bat to ball stuff with Kirk. It's clearly still there. I get that you don't want to give up on this player, especially, what is he, 24, 25 years old? He's still
24.
Young. Yeah, he's 24 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm looking at ways to improve the depth right now heading into the deadline, I want to see what Manoah does over the next 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to look himself because you do have to be a bit more desperate for starting pitching if he starts to just walk everyone on earth and becomes unplayable again.
Mm-hmm.
But it's clearly the right-handed bat. I love the Tommy Pham idea. The people pitching that around, I go, yep, a guy just like that would be great. But then to me, it's, does a catcher come around at the right price? Is there a catcher that can improve your depth where if the Kirk thing continues this poorly, you can at least have a defensible replacement? Because mm-hmm. Heinemann is not that. You're never going to go to Heinemann. But maybe you want to go to somebody else. Anyways, quick break. Best bet, by the way, Friday, 3 for 3 on the tweet. Yesterday, I had the under in the Blue Jays game. Nightmare beat. Absolute nightmare beat. Anyways, quick break. Let's come back. We're doing pod only today.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So yeah, I mentioned it. One perfect day gambling on the Friday. Took Saturday off. I went out with some buddies Friday night. I was no position to be doing much on Saturday. I barely made it to the couch to watch the Jays game. I was supposed to go. It was not happening. It was completely out of the question. The second I woke up, I was like, yeah, no, this is not happening. But I do like a couple of things today. So follow me on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus, and I'm going to post my bets there like I've been doing lately. So keep sharing them, keep liking them. Always encourages me to end up actually sharing more picks, more bets. Okay, so going to do podcast only today and got a bunch of stuff. You guys, some of your topics today I really like, but my own topic is going to be the better one, which is, all right, people are talking about the NHL midseason tournament. Like, should the NHL do one? Like, should the NBA... their idea just gets straight up copied by the NHL. And at first I hated it, and now I don't know. So anyways, head over to the podcast, subscribe to the podcast, leave 5 stars, and you can listen to that. We're going to post it wherever you get your podcast. Podcast-only portion of the show continues there. Cool, cool, cool. Podcast-only portion of the show. Jobo is back, like I mentioned, from his family cottage time.
Yeah.
So wholesome. So sweet.
I know.
Our young boy, you know, going out with his family and having himself a time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yeah, I said it on the actual radio portion of the show. NBA midseason tournament, everybody's hating on it. Mm-hmm. What do they call it? The NBA Cup? Something like that?
The NBA Cup? I didn't even see that.
I don't know. Yeah, there's like a midseason thing. And I saw some people just tweeting about it yesterday on hockey. And I went, yeah, all right, I'll think about this. And my initial reaction, as always, is I hate change. Change stinks. Screw change. I'm not doing this. No. I'm the worst for it. I hate it. I hate mm-hmm. that I'm so resilient to change at times. Here's what I think is undeniable, though. If you have a single elimination tournament in the middle of the year, and you're going to remove regular season games, why wouldn't you want that? Like, what is the case against? People are like, I won't care. The only thing, here's the only fan base that should legitimately care about it and not want it is Toronto. Because if they won the mid-season cup year one, you know, or they were dominant mid-season cup champions, and then they were just never winning Stanley Cup, they, that makes it worse somehow. That makes it so much worse if Toronto was to win the mid-season cup.
At least
my God.
The regular season cup.
No, it'd be
it would be...
I want to swear because it makes me feel so sick.
I saw it in your face. It
makes me feel so sick thinking about them winning it. So I would be torn because year one, you wouldn't want them to win. Once they win a Stanley Cup, stack all the mid-season cups you want.
Exactly.
But that's the point. No one thinks the NBA mid-season tournament is ever going to be as meaningful as the NBA championship.
Yeah.
I will say this, though. 20 years from now, like, it's a long time. These leagues are going to continue 20 years from now. 20 years from now, who knows? You might feel like, hey, this is really important. This has been around for decades. This has been around for a full generation turnover.
Yeah.
If you're Jobo's age, you know, you're a wee child, then all you've ever known is growing up with the mid-season tournament. So you might genuinely care about it. Like, at some point, like, again, I know international soccer, that's my, but at one point, like, what's the one called? Is it FA Cup?
The FA Cup.
That was the most important one, right?
The FA Cup, yeah. And then now it's just secondary to the Premier League.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Is it's just like things change. Time changes things. So I don't think that it'll ever be more important than an NBA championship. It's more historical. It's just it's North American sports. We're not going to turn into Europe. But things do evolve. Sports do evolve. And here's what I will say about the NBA. As much as year one that thing's going to get dunked on, although it actually kind of won't because the sneaky part of this that not enough people are talking about, or maybe they are, I don't know. I was going to say, like, a pretend like I've been listening to the discourse. I've been completely uninvolved. Is that this event is basically made for NBA media, where they get to show up Las Vegas, have a hub, be at a tournament, hobnob, you know, rub elbows and shoulders with the who's who of the NBA world, and listen, we all know... I ain't sharing secrets out of school here. If there's one media group that is the cliquiest, it's basketball. If there's one that thinks that they're the most important, it's basketball. Right?
Yeah.
Every sport has their guys and gals that take it to a different level of self-import. But basketball is pretty freaking high on the list. So yeah, having all those media members be there together, having a good time, feeling important, being at the event, they're going to shine a positive light on it. They'll tell the story well. That's great. I think for most part, fans aren't going to care about the Pistons playing, you know, the Hornets in the tournament. But maybe they will care about a single elimination game between Milwaukee and Boston. That's more interesting than just a regular season game between the two. They just have to figure out with these tournaments, what are the stakes?
Yeah.
Like, is there going to be an additive stake? How many regular season games come out of this? Because I do think what would be the ultimate prize, which would be so, so awesome, because the players would care too, because maybe the salary allocation ends up going to them, is if you reward these teams with a little bit more cap space or cap, you know, because they're never going to care about a draft pick. Like, if you're like, oh, you get a compensatory pick, you can't do that in the NBA, you can't do it in the NHL. It's just too stupid. Players aren't going to play for that. But, like, figure out a way to incentivize both the teams and the players. And I think that it should go beyond just extra cash, bonus money. Because we see that with the NBA All-Star Game, where guys are like, we're rich, man.
Yeah. They're
but if it can help the team win, where you go, hey, actually, you guys are going to be able to be given another mid-level exception next year. The winning team of the tournament gets a bonus mid-level or, you know, 5% more cap space than the rest of the NBA. And it allows them to decide to allocate that to current players on the team or whatever. Like, now we're talking money plus team incentive too. Because fans don't care if players get richer too. That's the main thing. How are you going to make the fans care about this more?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we're all kind of, this is a crap thing to say as someone who works in sports, but I think for the most part, we're kind of over 82 game schedules.
I agree.
82 game schedules are becoming the way of the past where you're like, how much? Baseball's fine because it's every day in the summer and it's like not up against anything for large portions of it. You can check out of a baseball season and check back in. I mean, the normies, like not professionals like you guys, just so you know, that was not, hey, Joe and Austin, don't worry, just take some downtime, dip out on MLB.
Don't worry.
Keep paying attention. But baseball is just easier to navigate 162. You don't need to feel as though it's as important. And it's always been that way.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel that way with hockey and basketball anymore. There's way too many games on the schedule where you go, oh, Raptors Pistons on a Friday night. Are you out of your mind? You think I'm going to commit to this?
In the middle of January.
Netflix just dropped, you know, or so Apple TV or whatever. No, Disney Plus just dropped season 2 of The Bear every episode. That or Pistons Raptors. Like, shut up.
Like, when half the players are out load managing and the other half are injured.
The players' parents would rather watch The Bear than those things. So if you're going to add a midseason tournament to this stuff, I'm just a little bit more receptive to it. We just need to get rid of the idea that everything is equal, that we're trying to create two championships here. It's like, it's not. But we need more stakes for the fans. Mm-hmm. And so hockey would need to figure out what those stakes are. But you're telling me that a hockey single elimination tournament wouldn't be dope in the middle of the year versus Leafs Red Wings for the third time?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Justin Hall's second appearance back in Toronto.
You're not excited for that?
The Red Wings decided to put James Reimer in net tonight because they're coming off a back-to-back. Like, come on. Let's be serious here. It would obviously be better. So everyone shut up, except for Leaf fans, because you're allowed to live in fear of winning the regular season cup.
That'd be the worst.
Yeah.
That would put us into the gutter.
First year, Leafs regular season cup winners, never living that down.
Oh, my goodness.
You actually have to throw the championship game.
Yeah, you do.
For the fans.
No, you do.
You got to be in the championship game, and you got to be like, take a dive.
For the fan's sanity, yeah, take you a have dive. To throw it.
Oh, yeah, actually, probably do later, more of this later in the week. But the Aho contract did come down.
Mm.
Oh, no, wait, it's not done. It's just rumored to be, right? We're still in rumor land?
Yeah.
Still
just
so rumor. I'll wait until that's actually rumor land. Done. I'll wait until that's actually done before I give a take because I don't want things to shift. Anyways, all right, let's hit your guys' topics. We got to start with Austin.
Yep.
Austin's
Titans.
Austin Mackey, the Titans are Austin, hold on, let me ask you a question. DeAndre Hopkins signs a 2-year, $26 million deal. Austin.
Could go up to $32 million.
Are the Titans back?
The Titans are so back. They have a pass catcher now. Now Mike Vrabel is now relegated to number 2 all time on the career receptions list for the Tennessee Titans with 12. You got a new number 1, DeAndre Hopkins. Yeah, it's exciting. I love D-Hop. I actually hated D-Hop because he played in the Texans forever and he used to kill us with Matt Schwab. Oh, no, I hated those teams.
But that's actually, this part of it is not, I haven't seen this any, I guess, like, again, this is bad. I keep going like, I haven't seen this anywhere. It's like probably a million people have this take. But don't you love stealing the guy? Like, this is the Spezza thing with Leaf fans. You know, you're stealing a guy that's super easy to root for and like. From a divisional rival,
yeah, exactly.
And sticking it to them. I don't know what it's like, how much you care about the Houston Texans, to be frank, because they've mostly been irrelevant. But I love the idea of you going out and being like, hey, Houston, you know how you loved this guy? Now he's going to score touchdowns against you week in,
week
out.
You're not an AFC South fan because Bill O'Brien, Deshaun Watson dominated that division for 3 years there for a little bit.
Yeah, whatever.
They beat the Bills in the playoffs too. Texans, man. Hate the Texans.
Yeah, but here's the thing though, dude. I hate to say this to you, but yeah, you're the most irrelevant division in all of football. As soon as Peyton Manning left that division, and even when Peyton Manning was there, because he was just dunking on
Andrew Luck, he was pretty good.
Even as good as he was always a band-aid, and they only had like 1 year where they ever actually felt like contenders. And your division is, it's all the ugliest jerseys. Yeah. It's the lamest teams. The only team with actual pedigree in the division is the Colts. Like, they're the only ones that actually carry weight around football fandom.
The Jaguars are fun right now.
No, but who cares? There's nothing the Jaguars can ever do to be cool or relevant or interesting or like not a joke of a team. Like, they're called the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah.
It's just not a thing. It's just never going
to
happen.
So yeah, DeAndre Hopkins, we're very excited about it. Great. Thanks, JD. Really happy to talk to you about this with you.
JD just brought up to dunk on the whole division.
Awesome. Awesome talk. DeAndre Hopkins, really pumped.
I do think, though, that the Titans are the second most respectable team in the division. I think that it goes
after
Colts.
You said every team in the division's irrelevant,
they
basically.
They are, but it goes Colts, Titans, Houston, Jags. And then Houston and the Jags kind of battle it out in a cute little way for who flips and who flops.
I think you got to give Houston more respect. They were good for a little bit there. They made the playoffs consistently.
No. Houston's entire legacy is having a stud receiver and then it not working out because they don't have the quarterback play. And then they finally got a QB, and then he turned out to be the world's worst guy.
Worst human.
Yeah. It's like, Yeah. So
there's a lot of reasons to
No. I don't have any respect for Houston. What I will say is I did watch an Andre Johnson highlight pack over the weekend.
Sick.
Yeah. Mm. And
Cortland Finnegan needs to shut him down, though. I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah, it's gotten that awesome scrap.
Yeah. But Andre Johnson was a bit of a bully there and used physical intimidation. That's wrong. Cortland Finnegan. I was going to say something. I'm getting canceled. Cortland Finnegan got in his head, and Andre Johnson couldn't handle it. But
this is my biggest fear of the
show. We're flying close to the sun.
But this is my biggest fear of the show, is that you get Mackey all fired up, and there's like, it's like perfect, 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 perfect. And then he just destroys it. You know, he's on a roll, and then he's just, and now here's one more added joke, and then it's just over, and everything's awkward and gone, and we have to move on. Anyways, I obviously like the move for the Titans, because you bring in an elite pass catcher, that's the best thing you can do to develop a young quarterback.
Yep.
And the Titans have always been just, you know, a tough out. They didn't trade Derrick Henry. They didn't get rid of Ryan Tannehill.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
No, I mean, this is in a long line of Titans taking washed up receivers, though, right? Julio
Jones. I
think
he's washed up.
I hope he's not washed up, but Julio Jones.
What evidence is there that he's washed up?
He wasn't great. His separation is fallen significantly from DBs. He doesn't get away from guys anymore. He's much more of a contested catch guy.
Yeah, but he's amazing.
His numbers were down
catch.
Last year. Now, that could be Kyler Murray being hurt, obviously.
I don't know, man.
I think
this
the numbers
signing.
Being down have more to do with the
but
Cardinals.
But it's just more of the history of the Titans. You know, Randy Moss ended his career here. Julio Jones didn't have a great year when he came.
No, Julio was done, and Julio was beat up year over year over year. D-Hop got the suspension and then had to come back.
Mm-hmm. I actually forgot he got suspended. You're right. I thought he got hurt. You're right. That's why he only played 8 games last year.
6 weeks suspension.
You're right.
And
played 9 games last year.
No, I've always liked D-Hop. And I think D-Hop has a swagger to him, too, that he carries to other teams. And I just like it that, like, okay, the AFC is obviously not wide open. Let's not play. It's going to be extremely difficult for them to be a nasty team in that division. But you still have a coach that just is gutty and puts together good game plans to make it dirty and make it close. And now all of a sudden you have a guy that can teach Treylon Burks things, right? He's going to help out your receiver room massively, who is a reliable target for Tannehill or for what's the name of the rookie again?
Will Levis. Willis helped plan him in OTAs, though we haven't given up hope on Malik.
Oh, yeah. Guess what? If that is the story, nightmare.
Yeah, Malik Willis, the guy who does not throw passes to wide receivers.
The guy that outplaying
Will Levis in OTAs.
The guy that passed got passed by Josh Dobbs.
Yeah, it's not great. It's not great.
Didn't complete a pass to a wide receiver in his first game.
I kind of wish, if I'm being honest with you guys, like the Titans never do this. The Titans always win 7, 8, 9 games. That's kind of the motto of the franchise. But I kind of wish they tanked for Caleb Williams this year. And I think if you get Caleb Williams, you reset the entire franchise. You're going to be good for 15 years. Yeah. I think this guy's special. So that's the direction in which the Titans have gone in. But if they weren't going to be able to trade Henry, if they weren't going to be able to trade Simmons, if they weren't going to trade Tannehill, they had cap space. They had no receivers. You have to get Hopkins. That division sucks. I think they can still win it. Out in the first round of the playoffs, baby. Woo!
The division rots. You're going to have a Colts team with either a rookie quarterback or Gardner Minshew. Gonna have a Jags be the favorites. What does that tell you? The Jacksonville Jaguars gonna be favorites. Mm-hmm. And Trevor Lawrence popped sometimes, and I went, ooh, Trevor Lawrence really good. And then there were other times where just not, you know. And I don't know, Calvin Ridley Jr. might be a great ad for them, but Etienne just sort of feels like the kind of guy too, where he shows up 1 week and then he completely disappears, and then he's always a little banged up. I don't know. We'll see. Like I have him as a keeper in my fantasy league, and I don't think I'm going to keep him. I think I'm going to drop him because I don't want to go through another year of the Etienne experience. I love it. And then Houston, obviously, like, is continuously a dumpster fire. This is my thing. You guys could not get below. You could not get below some of the other teams in football to be the number one tank team unless you went Malik Willis and traded a bunch of those guys that you mentioned. But apparently no one wanted Derrick Henry, right? Because
there's values for running backs.
That's
anymore.
What I mean. So they tried to shop him.
I got a follow-on for you, JD. Who's the highest paid running back in the league right now?
Hold on. The highest paid running back in the league right now?
CMC.
No, incorrect. I was going to say, didn't they franchise tag Tony?
No, because Saquon hasn't signed yet. So when Saquon signs, this will change. But right now, who is the highest paid running back in the league?
It's not CMC.
No, I know. It's not Tony Pollard because Tony Pollard got franchise
tag. It's
not
Alvin Kamara.
Quiet, Joe. Tony Pollard, franchise tag means he's aggregated top five. Can't be him. But who just signed a contract? Who just got a deal? Who just got extended? I don't know. Who is it?
It's Bijan Robinson on the Atlanta Falcons. Drafted in the top 10. Can you believe that?
Really? I love that. Wow. That's sick. Good for him.
So the whole running back position right now has been devalued to a crazy extent, right? So you're not going to get anything for Derrick Henry if you trade him.
Or, you're not. But and you know what else, too? I just mentioned you. Dude, there's something sweet about having your running back finish as your running back. Like, having Marshawn Lynch be at Seattle All-Star game this weekend, where he's, you know, putting the home run chain around Vladdy's neck, and he's, like, definitively a Seahawks guy, even though he did go to the Raiders at the end, like... But he stayed a little too long. He stayed a little too long, but it was worth it. Like, in the long run, it's worth it to keep your legends and have the cool legendary back. And Derrick Henry is that right now. Like, I don't think there's any running back in the last 5 years who you would have rather had the prime of in terms of fun to root for than Derrick Henry. It's just way better watching the bruiser back run people over and feel like you have the man amongst boys.
Well, yeah, and Joe, like Alvin Kamara. Like,
no, Alvin Kamara.
You don't feel the same.
Loser.
Oh, see, I would say loser.
I love
he's a
Alvin
dork.
Kamara.
He wears the stupid nose ring and he gets in trouble with the law.
It's just more his pass catching ability, right? Like, he's so much more dynamic than someone like Derrick Henry. But I totally see.
I'm in
what
love with Alvin Kamara, so I'm completely biased.
And his crimes? What were his crimes? He hits people.
Okay, beat a guy up, all right?
Yeah, exactly.
Not
criminal.
He is going to be suspended in the first week of September.
That video was brutal, I must say.
Yeah, exactly.
He's going to get suspended
criminal.
For that.
Criminal. Joe likes the nose ring.
No, but
criminal.
I think you're absolutely right. I do think, like, and that happened with the Titans with Eddie George. That the exact opposite happened with the Titans and Steve McNair. My heart was broken seeing Steve McNair end his career on the Baltimore Ravens. We don't have to talk about after JD. Please do not. So I totally.
He's on the roll. He's losing his mind.
What's happening now? Would you want to see that with Russell Wilson? Like, would you want to see Russell Wilson return to the
Hell
Seahawks?
No, I hate it.
Yeah, you're done with him? Yeah.
Of course. He can rot.
Sherman had gone back to the Seahawks, would you have wanted that instead of him ending his career in the Bucs? So yeah,
for sure.
No, there's something to be said for that for sure.
Yeah, but I like never trading him too and going for one more ride. I don't mind it. I just think that the Titans are the same team. They're gonna be gutsy. They're gonna have Tannehill be gutsy. They're gonna have Derrick Henry, and they're gonna have now D-Hop. They're an old team, but their defense is good. They're well coached. You got Simmons, like. You're just going to be a tough out. Yeah, do I think you're going to win a Super Bowl? Absolutely not. But if you win your division and you get into a playoff game and you're facing the Baltimore Ravens again and you already beat them, I just think that winning a playoff game is way more fun than being the team that finishes with like five wins.
The 100%.
You know, and I don't know how much Hopkins is going to change that. I'm just saying, like, I'd rather go in the direction once the thing you said, 100% correct. If you would have told me, hey, the Titans are going to try to bottom out, they're going to be the worst team in football, they're going to try and go for Caleb Williams, I would have said, hell yes. I wanted that the year that Seahawks actually drafted Russell Wilson. I was so pissed because they ended up with a better
when they
record.
They signed Matt Flynn, right?
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then they ended up drafting Russell Wilson. The rest was history. But I wanted Andrew Luck. I wanted to suck for Luck. I get it. I understand wanting to go get Caleb Williams. I felt the same way about the Seahawks when they had Geno Smith winning most improved player and me going, no, this sucks. We're not going to win anything. But then you get in a playoff game and you're watching playoffs and you go, we weren't going to be the worst. We just weren't. You weren't going to be as bad as the Houston freaking Texans were. Like, you could not match that. You're too well coached.
Yeah. And even the Colts are going to be horrible this year, too.
That's it, man. It's just...
No, it's a good point.
You know who's
going to
go way too high in every fantasy league is going to be Anthony Richardson.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's going to go so high. In
I think he's
going to
be like the fourth quarterback taking him in this league. It's going to be insane.
He's going to be the biggest screw-up pick because she's going to for sure make up for it with the rushing yards. Yeah. But there is no – first of all, Gardner Minshew knows that offense, and it's his coach from Philly that's there now, Steichen. Mm-hmm. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. We're getting too deep in the weeds in football right now. But yeah, guess what? Hey, guess what?
We're excited. Football's
started,
coming back.
Quarterback started. Hopkins signed.
Yeah.
And August is around the corner.
8 more weeks.
I know.
Eight
it's like football. Weeks. Hey, football is back.
Hashtag back.
Shout out Argos, too. Big win on Friday. Yeah, talking
Argos,
about football being back.
Dude,
Argos, checked
Argos are
yeah,
Argos the team
are
in
wagon.
Toronto right now.
Yes. God, I love the Argos so much. Truly, truly, truly love the Argos. Have not missed a game yet.
Really?
No.
Oh, wow, eh?
All four games clocked.
I missed the start to finish.
Yeah.
Oh,
but,
okay.
But I've seen good chunks of all four games now, which I think is a good.
You're on the pulse.
Yeah. Oh, I love the Argos.
Yeah.
But they are going to get so screwed over by NFL
guys. It's so every no, I'm exactly no, this guy. Every I'm in the CFL, then September hits and it's like, oh yeah,
first
the CFL's
preseason
on. What?
Game, I'm gonna be like, oh yeah, my god, 100%. The boys are back.
The Seahawks are playing the preseason.
Yeah, 100%, no question. Anyway, all right, let's talk about a couple other things. For we got the, time for one or two more.
Yeah, the massive story over the weekend was Steph Curry obviously winning the Celebrity Golf Tournament, hit a hole in one, had that huge putt on the 18th hole to actually win the tournament. Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny. The big reaction I saw from that is like, oh my goodness, like how is he so good at golf and basketball?
Yeah.
Are you surprised at all that no, a guy that athletic is good at another sport and can win a tournament in no, celebrities?
I think that he's clearly got just incredible depth perception and feel. Mm-hmm. And so golf just feels like a natural. His
touch is incredible.
Sport. He's yeah, got great touch.
Yeah.
I am a little surprised that it's like, and I know Tony Romo could have finished higher on a different day, but it's like the yeah, amount
he's
of
won
times,
the tournament before.
Yeah, the amount of times that we've heard about Tony Romo for him to be eighth and for him to be first. I'm not surprised at all by Steph. What I'm more interested in is I heard Adam Stanley on the morning show today with my boys yeah, Guns and Sam say that it was bigger for golf than Rory winning the Scottish Open, and I 100% agree.
Yeah.
Like, why? First of all, if you're anybody who doesn't play golf and you see Steph Curry hit that shot and you see how fun that is, mm-hmm, and what a joyous moment it was for him.
His reaction hit the hole in one.
That would make me want to play golf.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be watching the stuffy hypocrite win mm-hmm, a golf tournament I didn't watch.
And then just like celebrate just with a
but it's
fist
like
bump.
Golf fans are watching the golf.
Yeah.
You know? There's no one stepping into that silo going, I normally would have never watched the Scottish. Now I'm watching. It's like, no duh, that's bigger for golf.
Yeah.
Like, obviously it is, but it's a brilliant take by Stanley. Like, just to have that ready in the chamber in the mm-hmm, morning and just like shoot that at 7:40 or
fire
whatever.
It off.
And,
right, like, to start the week.
Yeah, right in Gunning's Rory loving heart.
Just zing it right
yeah,
at him.
Just blasted him with it right now. Guns is all excited about
right
his guy. He's just like, bang. No. Yeah, I'm not surprised Steph Curry's good. And I don't know. I just, yeah.
Are you a golfer at all?
Not really. I like, that really? I told you, disc golf.
Disc golf.
Yeah. Ball golf was too expensive, man. I was broke for years and years and years. And it's like the golf culture I was not a big fan of either.
I'm just bad at it and I get mad too quickly.
I know.
So I'll miff my fourth shot of the day and I'm like, this game sucks. And then mm-hmm, I'll hit one halfway decent shot and I'm like, we're so back. The sport's back.
Let's wrap this up. Let's wrap up and we'll save some other stuff when Simon's back tomorrow.
Sounds good.
And then, yeah, no Jays game tonight, which is kind of weird after you come back from the All-Star break. Let's have a night off immediately. There should be an Argos game tonight. They blew it.
Yeah.
Should be watching Argos.
Well, we came back
football.
From the All-Star break. Hot,
I do,
sweep,
I do
then...
hate when people have that take where it's like, oh, there's no MLB All-Star games on. They just put CFL games. It's like, yeah, so the guys should just play with 2 days rest, 3 days rest. Like, it's yeah, still football. You can't just turn it around that yeah, quickly and turn their bodies around and be like, hey, yeah, there's no sports on, guys. Get out there. Play. Come
Austin's
on.
Hot.
Not the Elks, cattle. It's
Elks?
Like, what? So we all want to talk about
the
how
Elks
they're not
have lost,
assets?
What, 20 home games in a row now?
Yeah, Elks.
Eesh.
No, that's actually horrible for the league. Like, that's well, not yeah, that's not
really
funny.
Bad.
Like, Edmonton's a
oh,
huge.
That's not funny. Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. Sorry, purist. Yeah, it is pretty funny. 20 home games in a row is an
no,
awful.
No, because, like, Edmonton, if they don't get yeah, people in that building, the league could shut down because they're huge for revenue.
Yeah.
So it's bad. It's Chris Jones. Get it together, buddy. Figure mm-hmm, it out.
That's the longest.
They picked
home
such
game.
A horrible name when they changed names yeah, that this did. Is the curse.
They you think so?
Yeah.
The Elks is bad. They did it because they wanted
Elks?
To keep the EE brand,
yeah,
and it's.
Oof.
There's Elks in Alberta.
Well, yeah, there Edmonton is. Elks rolls off the tongue
like a knife.
It scrapes off the tongue.
Yeah. That cuts your tongue on the way
Edmonton
out.
Edmonton Elks. What team do you play for? The Elks.
What
no,
is that?
It's a club for old men, not a football team. Anyways. All right. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for viewing. Share it. If you want to play Botano, hit me up. See you soon.